Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire MMA. Here to talk UFC Moscow. Our main event is going to be hotly debated on this podcast. It is Mark Hunt versus Alexei Oleinik. Fight IQ is a DFS DraftKings specific MMA podcast. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, the analyst for this podcast, Joe, also known as @SunSu on Twitter. Joe, how are you doing?
Good, man. I came oh so close last week, having a really, really good day. And I got T-Wooded, man. I needed Tyrone Woodley to win. I needed him to score less than 106 points or Darren Till to score less than 103 points. That's all I needed. And I win 10 grand for finishing in second place in the $10. Now, I was feeling pretty good because neither one of those guys are 100-point scorers.
Except everyone forgot what a mismatch it was. Like, I didn't think it was going to be that bad, but I was trying to tell you Darren Till was having close fights with Bojan Veličković. And in hindsight, it looked great, but that's what stuck out to me.
It's amazing how the whole dynamic changed because I'm on Woodley. And the whole dynamic changes because I'm rooting then for Till. Hold on. Take it to round three. Yeah. Like, the whole dynamic had changed. But I finished sixth. I also won a ticket. I'm in a tiebreaker for another ticket. So let's make some money on this card.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it in a second, but I also had a really good week last week. The other analyst on this podcast is Chris @RealChrisOlson on Twitter. Chris, how was your week last week?
It could have been better, quite frankly. I am glad I did get some purchase off of Jeff Neal, so I'm happy about that. More people than I expected seem to be on Frank Camacho. So, I took that 120 points I got from Jeff Neal with a lot of scarcity, and it helped me out quite a bit. But this week is the week I'm most excited about. If you guys follow me on Twitter, you know that I've been pumping Alexei Oleinik Fight Week all week. I'm ready to talk main events. I can't wait to get there. So let's get started. I can't wait.
You are out of your damn mind. By the way, I didn't plug my own Twitter, @TheDFSSniper with one S. This fight card is really interesting in terms of there are a lot of lopsided fights. I think roster construction is going to be the most important thing this week. Keep that in mind as you're listening. We're really hard up for these underdogs. Before we get into the actual fight breakdown, want to do a quick plug for our sponsor, RotoWire MMA. and just RotoWire in general, go to rotowire.com/free. Check out all their usually paid content for 10 days, all for free, no credit card required. Daily fantasy, season-long stuff. Check it out over there, rotowire.com/free. And let's get into the first fight of the night. Mirab Divalishvili, 9,200, taking on Tarian Ware at 7,200. Get ready to hear lines like this all throughout this episode. Divalishvili is a minus 500 favorite. Tarian Ware plus 435, and he has angered someone in the MMA. You know, the MMA gods are mad at him because this guy has gotten a murderer's row of people in his UFC stint. This is his fourth fight. He's 0-3. If you're wondering why he's gotten four fights, though, he's taken on Tom Dukinois, Sugar Sean O'Malley, Cody Stamann. And doesn't get a whole lot easier here in Mirab Divalishvili, who pushes an incredible pace. It's great for DraftKings. Will constantly look for takedowns. Personally, I don't think Ware is able to stop the takedown. Signs, who Divalishvili took down a ton, is a D1 wrestler. Just Divalishvili kind of gasses himself out. Here, though, I don't think Ware's going to be able to keep the pace either. I like the scoring. I like the scoring potential. First fight of the night is one of my favorites. I like Divalishvili. Let me think here. I'm thinking about this because we have 12 fights in this card. So I want Chris to go last for Alexio Linick.
All right.
So that means he has to start us off here. So, Chris, you're up.
All right. Sounds good. I pretty much have the same feeling you do. One thing I was going to say about Mirab is, I mean, and this fight in general, the framing could be, you know, the two best fighters without a win in the UFC, because Mirab famously lost the science fight by split decision, if I remember correctly, and then, you know, the weird guillotine thing with Ricky Simone. So it's going to be an interesting fight, I think. I think thing about Mirab is we know that he's, you know, a fire plug, and he's gonna you know, chase those takedowns, but he doesn't hold position very well at all. I think three times in that Simone fight, when he tried to take the back, he just slid right off, and, you know, Simone was able to just get back to the center. I like Tarian Ware. I like the fact that he closes distance. That's when he had his most success in that Sean O'Malley fight, when he was able to close the distance. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I don't really think Mirab gets tired, at least not visibly. I mean, he must be because he expends a lot of energy. But I don't think his fight aggressiveness really flags that much. And I think that's going to be the biggest problem for Tarian Ware here. I think Ware is a clean boxer with fast hands. So he could tag Divalishvili up a little bit. But even in his last fight, we saw that his striking, speaking of Divalishvili's, was getting a little better. So, yeah, I'm going to take Divalishvili by decision here also. I just don't think he's going to be able to stop the takedown or keep up with the pace. So that's the pick.
Also interesting, in Divalishvili's two UFC losses, he scored over 70 points in each of those. Yeah, in his losses. So when you're picking up in that high range, there's a lot of targets here. Something to keep in mind, who's going to score a ton of points, who's most likely to score a ton of points. For me, Divalishvili is pretty high on that list. How about you, Joe?
Look, I mean, Divalishvili, I saw his last fight in Atlantic City. He seems to have poor fight IQ, and that is really the only chance I see here for Tarian Ware. I started out the week, like, I don't know if I shared this with our millions of viewers, but as soon as the salaries drop, I always create one lineup right off the cuff. No research. I just go in, salaries, boom, create a lineup. The first lineup I created had Tarian Ware in it because I'm thinking, okay, 7.1K. He's fought some decent, really good competition. I would argue that he won the fight against Dukinois, that I scored that fight for him. I thought that was a really bad loss.
It's a close fight, but I gave it to
Ware. It was a close fight. I gave it to Ware anyway. So the point here is that, look, he is clearly the better technical striker, and we know that Divalishvili does not have great fight IQ. So would it shock me if Ware caught him with something? No. Now, I believe that Divalishvili is a Georgian, which is a subtle distinction from, you know, a normal Russian. So, yeah, it's a lot closer than what Ware is, but I don't necessarily know that that is enough to show a high level of favoritism if it's a close decision. So my pick is going to be Dishvali. And to both your points, you know, he will score well on DraftKings if he wins. He will get a lot of takedowns. I do see it as a fight going the distance. However, with that said, I think Ware has got a pretty decent floor. So I could think of a lot worse plays in cash. I mean, he's scoring 50 points, 40 points in a loss, which in this card, you know, with all these high price favorites, that might not be the worst punt in the world in cash. Dare I even say it?
Yeah, you could stack a fight.
Stack a three-round fight?
I don't know about 40 or 50, but if there's any three-round, some, you know, you're going to stack any three-rounder on this card, it's a Dvalishvili fight for sure.
Right. So my pick is Dvalishvili, but I wouldn't kill anybody for throwing Ware in a couple lineups, nor would I kill anybody for Ware and cash.
All right, next up, Ramazan Emiev. It's one of the ones I'm not totally sure on. Stefan Sekulic is 6,900. Emiev, 9,300. The line on this fight is more lopsided than the name pronunciation I just gave it, as Emiev is a massive minus 560 favorite. Sekulic is plus 475. Look, it's hard to find tape on Sekulic, but Emiev is a real deal prospect. The only thing, like, he mixes it up well. He has very good fight IQ, very professional fighter. Doesn't really stand out anywhere, except that he is good everywhere. And Sekulic, I believe he's the one who's a gym teacher, not to steal Joe's narrative thunder, but I think he's a gym teacher in Serbia, taking this fight on short notice. The one worry I have for Emiev is he typically doesn't score well on DraftKings at all. He's got wins over, I believe it's, pull it up, it's right in front of me, Sam Alvey and Alberto Mina at 65 points, 54 points. At 9,300 on this card, that's not going to get it done, but I do like him to win this fight. Joe, what do you have for this one?
Yeah, so actually he's minus 670 on DraftKings sportsbook.
I'm going by 5 yards.
I know.
With the vague on the DraftKings sportsbook,
DraftKings are really wild. Although if you're betting dogs, DraftKings might not be bad. If you need to find someone that you're gonna be underexposed to, it's gonna be Emiev, just because of what you stated that. You know, he doesn't seem to have any sense of urgency. And I don't know a lot about his opponent. It just seems like this is a real softball for him. So it wouldn't surprise me if he got the finish. But I certainly think there are better plays at his price point. But he is my pick to win.
Chris, what do you got for this one?
Well, since you guys don't seem to have gotten a lot of tape on Sekulic, I'll tell you that you're one of the fortunate ones. I suffered through a couple of his fights, and generally he's a grappler who throws big power single shots, but mostly what he does is get himself back up and look for a chance to grapple and bring the fight to the ground. I really don't see a big path for him to win at all in this spot. I also think Emiev can finish here just by overwhelming him when he backs him up. I think your point's well taken about the his two fights in the UFC, but Sam Alvey's a tough guy to look good against even if you win, because, you know, he just, by not doing anything, he tends to shut down your offense. And then in the last fight, you know, we saw him really have to defend a lot of grappling exchanges, and which he did very well, which is another reason that I like him a lot here. I think he's better everywhere, and I think he's got sneaky power, and I'm probably going to throw him into a GPP or two, or I would recommend that somebody would do that, just because, you know, I agree with you guys, because there's a lot more flashier favorites on this card. So I think he's going to be under-owned against an opponent that he's got pretty much an advantage everywhere against. And if that spells finish, which it could do, you're going to have a lot of those beautiful points to yourself. So the pick is Emiev, and I would say don't sleep on him as a pick to get score a lot of points here.
All right, so I'm going to backtrack real quick. I missed a question. Marco in chat asked, and I'm going to just give a quick number because I don't want to spend too much time on this. What's your ceiling for a Mirab decision? I'm going to say, and the decision, his ceiling still pretty high. I'm going to go 115. Joe?
All I'm going to say is, because I'm really bad at this, is I'm going to say under that. Chris? I'm going to say under.
Uh, I'll say under.
Okay. By the way, Zelda says he wants a game-worn Chris Olsen RotoWire hat.
Yes, I saw that. I mean, you know what? It's kind of creepy, but I could use the money. So if he wants it, you know.
I mean, you just alienated your fan base calling it creepy. So I don't think it's going to work.
Hey, you know, no, I'm not. I don't judge. I just, you know.
No, it's too late for that. Moving on, Jordan Johnson, 8,700, taking on Adam Yandiev at 7,500. This is an interesting one. There's a lot of narratives on this fight that I'm sure I'll touch on a few, and I'm sure I'll miss some. Johnson's the favorite at minus 250. Yandiev is plus 230. Jordan Johnson's coming down from 205 to 185, taking this fight on a week and a half's notice. It means he's been losing weight, and you know this has been his plan. He looked okay at weigh-ins. He made the weight. I have to worry about his gas tank a little bit, whereas Yandiev hasn't fought in 3 years, is 9-0, has never been out of the first round, and has been involved in fight-fixing scandals or accusations, I should say. Nothing confirmed, but accusations. And if you watch some of his fights, they look weird. Jordan Johnson, decisions at 205 against not good competitors. Guys like one of the Da Silvas, last fight was Adam Milstead. For me, this is a fight where it's dog or pass. I mean, I guess you'd go GPP on Johnson, but there are other people in that range I like more. Yandiev, you know, clearly has power. I don't know. This is one of those. The tape I've seen, I think he's good enough. He's aggressive, big hands. I don't think much of Jordan Johnson, and because I'm hurting for dogs, this is one of the spots I'm willing to take a shot. So, point per dollar, I leave Yandiev because I need people in that range. Chris, what do you have on this fight?
It's funny you should mention about the fight fixing things. One of the fights was you saw Yandiev get one arm around his opponent. He didn't have the choke secured yet, and the ref goes, "Do you tap? Do you tap?" It looked like professional wrestling. It was very weird. But having said that, and you know, we can't assume yada yada yada, but I don't know. I'm just not a big Jordan Johnson fan. I think he came into the UFC with a lot of hype as like this wrestler extraordinaire, get your takedowns. But we saw in the Adam Milstead fight that when he can't get the takedowns, he's basically just like a slow overhand. He's not very quick with his hands at all. I think he's a better technical grappler than Yandiev is going to be. Just we saw him, you know, in those exchange up against the cage, he'll you know try to control with the overhook, and you know he'll do all that sort of good stuff. But you know I don't know Yandiev. It's so hard to gauge his fights because it's generally just him running into takedowns or his opponents trying to secure things and being overzealous and slipping out and him getting the upper hand. So it's really hard to gauge his fight. I think that if you're gonna throw an underdog dart, this might be as good a place as any. I think it's going to be like a wild maelstrom of a fight for as long as it lasts. But I think I'm going to take Jordan Johnson's poise to win the fight. I just think he's a more controlled fighter. And I think Yandiev can get himself in a space where he can't get himself out of. And I kind of expect that to happen. But I'm probably going to dog or pass this fight as well for DraftKings.
Joe?
Okay, well, there's a little bit of narrative around this fight, okay? So we've already mentioned that Yandiev has not fought for 3 years. No one seems to know what he's been doing for 3 years. Our good friend, who we've actually had on as a guest, Newsom, has got some contacts in M1, and even his M1 contacts could not tell him what Yandiev has been up to. Here's the narrative. So his father, first of all, I should say his family is very wealthy, so he's not doing this to make a living. His father is a famous judoka. If you know anything about the former Soviet Union, judokas, including Mr. Putin, have done quite well. He parlayed his judoka fame to becoming a Chechen tycoon in the construction industry. His father had several sons. They took up judo. So he's not doing this for money, which is why he hasn't had to fight in the last 3 years. What's interesting about how he fights is that his submission style, and again, you guys are much more technical analysts than I am, but this just jumped out at me. His submission style is not, is old MMA, is not something that would work on a regular basis in new MMA. It's neck cranks, right? It's pure brute strength. It's like anybody that has got some level of judo skill would be able to get out of those types of submissions. So the first lineup I created had Ware in it. It also had Yandiev in it. Because of the 7.5, the fact that the guy's got all his first round finishes, he's got a shot. But if this goes beyond the first round, I have to think that Jordan's offensive wrestling and just overall experience and activity over the course of the last 3 years are going to serve him well. So take a flyer on Yandiev. If it gets out of the first round, I think you're going to have problems, but I'm going to pick Jordan to win the fight.
All right, next up, Magomed Ankalaev, 9,100, taking on Marcin Pacino, I think, 7,100. I should remember his name, but I don't know if he does after the beating he took from Sam Alvey, one of the weirdest knockouts you'll see, when she got clipped on the feet and then just dropped his hands and walked towards Alvey, clearly not there anymore, and then Alvey hit him again and put his lights out for good. Whereas on the other side, Ankalaev beat the crap out of Paul Craig for 14 minutes and 59 seconds before getting triangled. I'm sure you've heard that all week in every MMA pod you listen to, but a lot of us got burned pretty bad on that one, myself included. And he's back. He's minus 430, Pacino plus 380. Look, Pacino has a karate style. From what I've seen, I don't think he could stop a takedown. Ankalaev, he comes from a gym with a lot of names you'd recognize but can't pronounce. Grapple first. Should get takedown, should redeem himself. I think he's one of the safer plays in that range. Not sure terribly about his ceiling is the one thing that concerns me, because he'll get a takedown. And you saw against Paul Craig, he doesn't do a lot of advancing, ground and pound, beat you up. However, I think a finish likely materializes here. I have a hard time seeing Pacino winning this fight. And I like guys who go for takedowns, so I am pretty high on Ankalaev this week. Joe, what do you have?
Now, is Pacino the guy, or is Pacino the guy that's coached by Bojovic? You know, or is that the other? Is that
Mihailovic?
I think that was Suklovic.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Okay, you got it. Okay, yeah. I knew one of these guys was coached by Bojan. So this is I laugh every time I think of either the low fight IQ of the fighter, or what a bad corner he had to not yell out, "Hey, dude, hold on! You only got 10 seconds left." I do think he's going to try to redeem himself here, and I don't see anything that the other guy has that he hasn't seen. So I'm going to go with the Russian here,
Chris.
I'm going to have to, because I noticed a lot of people were doing this after the fight too, and he burned me too. So, but I'm going to have to come to his defense a little bit here. Should he got caught in it? No, but once you're in there and it's clamped, I got to imagine that you're panicking and you don't really think about much except for, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. So I don't blame him for tapping once the sub was in. When you can say he shouldn't have let it get in, but I can't jump all over the guy when he was getting choked unmercifully. That's the one thing, my one defense of him. But I will say that, you know, I watched that fight and I didn't remember having Paul Craig quite as much success as he did. I mean, he got a couple takedowns of his own. He held position a little bit. I don't expect Prochnio to do that. But look, Prochnio is still an explosive striker, and I think Ankalaev is gonna be waiting a little bit too much here. Obviously, if they get in grappling situations, I favor Ankalaev. But to your point, Sean, he doesn't really do much when he's on the ground. He's sort of just a pound-you-out kind of guy. We've seen Prochnio in his regional fights be kind of explosive when getting back to his feet. Obviously, you know, holds his hands low. Obviously, doesn't move his head. None of those things are ideal. But, you know, I don't really expect Prochnio or Ankalaev, I should say, to land a knockout shot. Although, you know, we've seen him do that before too, so it's not out of the question. But, you know, I'm not totally looking past Prochniak as a live dog here, just because I think he's explosive enough to land that big shot. And I have questions about, you know, Ankalev's his ceiling here. But I think overall I'm gonna take Ankalev to win the fight. But I would say don't sleep on Prochniak entirely.
For me, the rebuttal off that, I think Prochniak is a fade for me personally. I think there's not a ton of dogs. He's not one of the ones I'm interested in because he has that karate style. I don't know if he's gonna knock Ankalev out, but I think he will be very low owned. If you're interested in that's how you win a GPP, Chris. So
that's
if you know, I can't wish that for you though, because I'm probably gonna play Ankalev in cash.
Well, look, I'm not saying, you know, invest heavily. I'm just saying, you know, you're making like 542 lineups like Joe likes to do. Maybe a couple with Prochniak. That's all I'm saying.
Look, Chris, I will tell you that, and it's not because I have any level of confidence in him to win. It's just because there are not a lot of live dogs on this card. I've got 96 lineups created so far, and I am 24% Prochniak.
That's insane,
wow,
Joe.
That's insane.
You need to make some edits.
Well, the number's going to go down because I have 14 lineups in queue, so I'm gonna roll with 110 this week.
No, you need whatever. Even if you don't do any more Prochniak, it's still way too much.
No, there are no more. There's no more Prochniak. So that's. But I mean, and that number was higher. I actually pared it down.
You need to pare down some more. Maybe as we talk about Marabek Taisimov at 8,900, taking on Desmond Green at 7,300. Taisimov is a big favorite. He is at, pull it up, the current line, minus 475. The comeback on Green plus 420. Seemingly like every fight on this card, tons of narrative. If you haven't heard, Desmond Green last month caused a car accident in which two people lost their lives. There's, you know, rumors circulating. Could there be pending charges? Can he travel? The fight is on. Taisimov, on the other hand, seems to fight every year, once a year, because of visa issues. And he missed weight by 7 pounds, which is not something Desmond Green's unfamiliar with, because Michel Pajares did the same thing to him. And I think it's strategy. I don't think Taisimov, I think it was on purpose. You know Green needs the fight. He knows Green's going to try and grapple, and that extra weight is going to make things a little harder, plus help the gas tank. That being said, I have some questions about the ceiling of Marabek Taisimov. I know 100, obviously 100 is a great score, but right in that area is the best he can do. Whereas we talked about Divalishvili with grappling upside, I think can get higher than that. Taisimov is really knockout dependent. Now he's on a 5 knockout streak. He scored 101 against Silva, 113 against Hadzovic. Those are both great. You take those. The two before that, 92 against Alan Patrick.
Tough fight.
And 99 against Christodoulou.
He's a can.
Yeah. So those are all good scores, but on this card, I'm not sure that's going to be enough or that he can get a first round finish because Desmond Green has never been knocked out in his professional career. That being said, Taisimov is the better fighter. He should win here. I'm more concerned about the scoring. And Desmond Green, because he likes to grapple and how much I like grapplers on DK, I'm going to have Desmond Green as one of the dogs I mix and match. That being said, Marabek Taisimov has the way better future. The fact that he missed weight totally helps him. He wins this fight. Does he get a finish is the real question. I think that's what we all need to kind of decide. So, Chris, what do you think? Does Marabek Taisimov get a finish here?
I'm leaning more and more that he does. And the reason I say that is because, you know, if you rewatch that the Gleison Tibau fight with Desmond Green, you know, when he tries to fight from the outside, Desmond Green, what his plan seems to be is to just jump in to range with shots. And he got countered quite a few times by Tibau doing that, more than I remembered. It didn't turn into anything because Tibau is the kind of guy, when he's fighting a guy longer than him, he really has nothing to do except throw, you know, these power shots that fall short. But I think if Desmond Green does that against Taisimov, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. And I also think, I mean, sure, he's not the grappler wrestler, but I mean, I think like his anti-grappling is really pretty good. I mean, Alan Patrick couldn't take him down, couldn't even come close. So I love his takedown defense. I don't think Green's going to be able to get him down. I don't think he's going to be able to keep him there. At any rate, I just think that look, he can do pretty much anything. He can come forward. He can lead. He can knock you out going backwards. He's got fast hands. I really like him a lot here. And I mean, the fact that Desmond Green's never been knocked out, I mean, can only add to, because I think a lot of people are going to have that perception. And so, you know, when he does get his finish, you know, I think that's going to lead to a lot of points, and maybe people are going to fade him for that reason. I just think he is, as you said, you know, he's the future. And I think that Desmond Green is just not a fighter. He doesn't have any weapons for him. And I think the first time he tries to open up, it's going to be trouble for him. So yeah, I'm taking Tyson off to get the knockout.
I disagree with you that I think Tyson off is going to be pretty chalky. I think people are, you know, this Desmond Green, his mind can't possibly be in the fight, which there's probably some merit to that. I actually think Tyson off is going to be really popular. Joe, what do you think on this fight?
So I think there's a bit of line value in Tess, just because, you know, he is a sub 9K fighter here in a card that's loaded with 9K fighters. I think this would be a difficult enough fight for Green absent the narrative. But my God, I mean, you're coming into a fight where not too long ago, oh, by the way, while driving on a revoked license, or suspended license, you got into an accident that ended up in the death of two people. So I don't know how, at the very least, he's not going to go to trial of some sort. I also agree with you, Sean, that this weight miss was strategic, because he knew that this guy is flying to Russia, right? He's not going to say no. He likely needs the money for the fight. This was very strategic and dare I say smart. He's sacrificing 20% of
40.
Oh, it's 40. Yeah.
Okay. So he's 40. Okay. So he's sacrificing 40 and he can't win fight of the night. So yeah. But I think with the card loaded, you know, the chances that he wins, well, I don't know, maybe not, but I do like him a bit. Like I always said it, I would rather have a guy miss by, you know, 5 pounds than miss by a quarter of a pound, because at a point, you know, he probably said, you know what, just fuck it. I'm sorry, just F it. I'm not gonna cut weight anymore, right? So I do like him here. I think that if it goes beyond the first round, it could get interesting. But I do like him here, and that was good comment that Chris made about Patrick. I certainly do not think that Green is a better wrestler than Patrick. So, Taz.
All right. Next up, you know what? I actually want to do a quick public service announcement. I should have mentioned this in the open. Remember, this card is tomorrow, Saturday, September 15th. It starts, lineup block is 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. So it is an early card, all on Fight Pass, but make sure you get your lineups in. I'm over in chat, right? By the way, if you're listening to this afterwards on the RotoWire MMA iTunes feed, we record these Friday nights. Jump in on YouTube, subscribe. You'll get the notification that we're live, and ask any questions. There's some good banter going on. As questions come in, I'll get to them. Also, now that I'm in here, guys who are watching, we have about 30 or so people watching live. If you guys could click that little thumbs up button, I'd appreciate it. I'm probably asked for trouble. But we don't have any thumbs up, and we have two thumbs down. And if you're one of those two people, you can get out. And everybody else, go ahead and click the thumbs up. Moving on that note.
Look, I don't mind if someone gives us a thumbs down, in all honesty. Tell us why. You know, like
I'm just being a smartass.
No, seriously, though. I think it's a good question. Like, okay, why? Like, well, what don't you like? I'm perfectly willing to accept criticism as long as it's valid.
If we were at the main event and Chris was talking to Alexi Olenek, then go ahead and thumbs down the crap out of this video.
No, that's gonna be the best part of the show. What are you kidding me? Come on.
All right. Let's get there, because we are about 35 minutes in. We have Rustav Khabilov, 9,500, taking on Cajun Johnson, 6,700. Khabilov, -750. Cajun Johnson, +600. Cajun Johnson, this is his last fight in the UFC. Got destroyed by Islam Makhachev last time out. Dana White hates him because he's part of that Project Spearhead, I think it is. Fighters trying to get a union along with Leslie Smith. He's on his way out. Khabilov should win this fight. The problem is the Cajun makes fights ugly, and Khabibov isn't the most volume action packed fighter. He's not urgent at all. So this could turn into a low scoring affair, and anywhere but Russia, I'd be half concerned Cajun weasels out a win. The bigger concern is what is Khabibov's score. This is one of those where if you're going to punt somewhere, we'll talk about Peter Yan versus guy I can't remember later, the Korean or Japanese guy.
Soon.
I wanted to say Chu, and I knew it wasn't right. Soon, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go towards somebody suggested Sukalich earlier. I'd go towards Johnson of those super punts. I think right now we are up to Joe for this one. What do you got?
Okay, so we're probably going to get another thumbs down here, but I have my own public service announcement. We got to give major props to the DFS sniper for crushing it in the NASCAR qualifier, going to the live final. Not only did he get into the live final, but he actually finished first. Not that that got him any more money, because you just had to finish the top 12 out of 30. He actually killed it and finished first. So props to the DFS sniper for a free trip to Charlotte. He's gonna compete for some major ducats down there. So okay, so back to the card anyway. So
appreciate it.
Yeah, 9.5K on DraftKings. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd rather pay up 100 for Yan. I'd rather go down to any number of spots. With that said, it could be interesting because I think he might be underowned. He might be worth a play for that reason. I will say he is probably going to be the lowest owned fighter that I have above 8.9K. I do pick him to win though.
Chris?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because I was thinking about this fight, and I remember going into Cajun Johnson's last fight. I was like, well, this is a terrible style matchup for Cajun Johnson because we have a wrestler, and all Johnson does is back himself up against the cage and try to go back and forth. But I was thinking to myself, he's not going to really do that, is he? And then the fight came, and that's exactly what he did, and he got himself taken down. And so I just don't understand how this guy expects to win fights against dedicated wrestlers like that. I would like to think that this time he will – because he's a quick guy. He should be in the middle of the cage trying to use his movement to avoid the takedowns, but instead he makes it as easy as possible. So if he does that again, which I guess I have no reason to think that he won't, he's basically going to feed Khabibov takedowns. And once he's on top, we know he's a strong guy. We know he's a good positional grappler. Does he have a finish in the UFC yet? I'm not sure. Anybody, Bueller, no?
Keep talking. We'll look.
All right, I'll let you guys. If you guys could find that for me, that'd be great. But I don't think he does, and I think that'll shy some people away. But I just can't help being drawn to him by the way that the Cajun Johnson fights, and I don't think that when he actually connects, he hits hard. But I just think he's got possibly the worst style matchup. Again, for one of these dedicated wrestlers. So I would say, as Joe said, and thank you for saying it first so I didn't have to, because I seem to be saying it a lot, that if you want to take him as sort of a pivot away play from a lot of these other more expensive guys, I would say go for it.
He's got to finish way back in the days that, before the iPhone 3 came out against Vince from Hell Pichelle. He's got one finish.
All right.
One fan.
He also has the knockout win over Yancy Medeiros.
What? Are you sure?
Yep, 2013.
Was that in the UFC? Yeah.
It's on DraftKings.
Oh, you are correct. Oh, you know what? It was a hand injury. So it was a technical knockout.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
you are correct, though, technically.
All right, Chris, do your best to keep it short on this one. Because it's Peter Yan at 9,600 against Jin Su San at 6,600. Peter Yan is minus 900. If you don't know, he's a freaking killer at 135. I think he's going to be at least top 10. People are touting him even higher. That top 10 is conservative. Dude's a monster. Kept having guys fall off the card. Nobody wants to fight him. Douglas Silva, D'Andrade, looking at you. Peter Yan wins this fight. If you can fit him, play him. He's super expensive, though. Chris?
Well, I don't know if you guys managed to, but your boy did manage to find some tape on Son. And, you know, honestly, I wish there was some more to say. There's really not that much. He likes to pressure. He's like the ultimate, like, pressure counter fighter, where he tries to pressure and draw you out. And Peter Yan does pretty much the same thing, except he's better at it. I also think he's a more accurate puncher. I think he's a more powerful puncher. We've seen Son in some of those fights. You know, he likes to go for these body lock takedowns, which I assume means he's pretty strong. But, you know, I don't really see him being that much stronger than Peter Yan. And per your wishes, Sean, I'll keep this short. And I'm going to say Peter Yan wins the pressure war, as I expect him to, hits him with something hard and knocks him out.
Joe, what do you got?
Okay, so I do understand a little bit of Korean. So I saw a spy video of Soon asking his coach how he could beat Peter Yan. And I may have got the translation wrong, but I swore that his coach said, translated into English, the way that you beat him is with a stick in his bed while he's asleep. Because that's the only way he's got a shot to win this fight. 9.6K cash game lock. Very hard to pay up for in GPPs, although I would try to use him and create a number of lineups featuring Peter Yan, maybe with the higher end of the mid-range, so you don't have to go too far low down the spectrum. But I think it's probably, as reflected by the salary, the best play on the card.
All right, next up, Khalid Mirzaliyev, 8,400, taking on CB Dalloway at 7,800. Mirzaliyev is the favorite in this one at -165, the comeback on Dalloway +155. The question in this one is, what can Mirzaliyev do with the wrestling of CB Dalloway, and is CB Dalloway going to slowly decline? Last time out, he won by getting knocked into oblivion by Hector Lombard, granted a solid 5 seconds, it seems like, after the horn went off for D1 for round one. It was a disqualification. He also has recently been knocked out by an elevator. Mirzaliyev is a good prospect. I don't want a ton of this fight because I do think Dalloway is tough, can fight at a slow enough pace, could grind some grappling. I'm leaning dog or pass, mostly because the others in this range, such as Krylov, Blachowicz, Mark Hunt, even Olenek, if you want to get really crazy. Actually, I probably played either one of these guys before Olenek, but you get what I mean. This is a GPP range, and I don't see this being a cash fight, so it's mostly dog or pass in terms of Dalloway, hoping he uses his wrestling. But Mirzaliyev is a solid prospect. Chris, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, I don't know. Like part of me thinks that Dalloway can use his grappling and top control. Part of me thinks he's a better positional grappler. But
we saw legendary savings are on now. Oh, Intel Gamer Days 2018 is your chance to save.
Dude,
pretty sure we can't have commercials. Stay focused. Stay focused.
Sure Dog was talking to me, but it's over.
Sure Dog is just, you know what? I'll be nice. Just go to Tapology.
Oh, shots fired. All right. Well, anyway, I think that as I said, I kind of like the wrestling at Dalloway here, but problem is, that in the fight he had with Ed Herman, like, I don't know, every time they were on the feet, it seemed like he was either getting hurt with something or, you know, getting backed up. And it sort of reminded me of the last day Diego Sanchez fight, where he was winning on the ground, but every time he's on the feet, you were afraid he's going to get murdered. So I kind of just have the feeling that he's going to get knocked out. If he can sustain his grappling for three rounds, I think he's got a chance. But I think I can't escape the feeling that a knockout's coming. So I'm going to go with that.
Okay, well, you guys stole a lot of my narrative, you know, being knocked out by the elevator. Here's a little bit more, though. Dalloway did not fight at all during 2016. Okay. He had one fight in 2017. And if you can call the fact that he was knocked unconscious in round one, at the end of round one in 2018, he's fought once in 2018. So not an overly active fighter here. D1 wrestler, you know, which, you know, okay, great. I do think that there's some value in maybe targeting this fight. I mean, there's not a lot of fights where you could target both sides and feel good about it. But I think there, you know, there is a path to victory here for both fighters. I'm going to go with the Russian again, which, surprise, surprise. But I do think it's worth putting some lineups together with Dolloway.
All right. Next up, my least favorite name on the card, Alexei Kunchenko. Hey, got through it. For whatever reason, I've been stumbling on him all week. Taking on Thiago Alves. Kunchenko is 9,000. Alves is 7,200. Kunchenko, who I was going to say the Russian, but I'm not positive he's Russian. I think he is.
Yes.
I believe he's the favorite at minus 560. Alves at plus 475. Look, this is one of those. Kunchenko is a legit prospect. I believe he's the one. God, all these Russians have been jumbled in my head all week. He is the M1 champion, correct?
Yes, M1
yes, global. Welterweight. I think he's actually 34. I don't know if he's, you know, prospect status.
He's the M1 champ coming in, taking on Thiago Alves, who has been declining. Curtis Melender knocked him out last time out. He beat Patrick Cote, but, you know, Patrick Cote retired after that fight. And Jim Miller held him down for three rounds in their fight in 2016. So this is one of those, I think they're going to stand and trade. I think it's going to be a kickboxing match. Actually, if that's what happens, then this line is too wide. Kunchenko opened at minus 245. If he looks to grapple here, I think he'll have some success. But really, I think he's kind of just a more polished version of Alves as of late. And, man, I wish I could trust Alves' chin a little more. I wish Melender hadn't just knocked him out, because this is one of those maybe I play him in cash type of situations, and that he could stay around for a decision, land, you know, 50, 60 strikes and a loss and take me, you know, 25, 30 points. At his price tag of 7,200, I would sign up for that. So that's the way I'm leaning this fight. Kunchenko is live. I can't fade him. I think he's right now better than Alves, but they're really similar fighters to me, and this line has really gotten steam pretty quick where I think it's a little wide. Who are we on for this one?
Me. Actually, I think it was me last time and you went to Chris, but we'll let Chris do Hunt Olonek before me anyway. So I actually like him a fair amount here.
Kunchenko or Alves?
Kunchenko. And there's also some odds value here. You know, he's on top of guys priced higher than him, salary-wise. So the widening of the line makes odds value for Kunchenko.
Real quick, just with odds value, it's a conversation we should have a different day. We're not up against it. But really, I think there's a difference personally between odds value that is inherent where Vegas sets the line and odds value that the public has steamed. Like there's, I love to know
fair enough.
Money versus number of tickets. Just something we should talk about at a later date.
Fair enough. I think you need to look at both, but I mean, I see him at 9K on top of guys, you know, 9.1K, 9.2K. And to me, that translates to some odds value. So I liked him before, you know, I don't know what took him so long to get into the UFC, but I think that they want him to win. The UFC does, so he could be promoted, you know, especially as they try to build up that Eastern European market. I have to believe Alves is gone or pretty close to gone. You know, ever since USADA, he's never really looked the same. He beat Patrick Cote. Okay, big whoop. Cote left his gloves in the ring after that fight. Definitely, I don't know this for a fact, but I have to figure that USADA probably shaved a couple years off of his career. I like Kunchenko here a fair amount.
Chris?
Well, my first at least semi-confident underdog pick. I like Alves.
Oh, my God, I'm going to do this. And I have to say before Chris starts, one thing I wanted to mention, in defense of Chris, and I cannot believe I'm saying that, of all of the big underdogs on this card, all the underdogs, Alves is by far the best fighter. Like, I don't think there's not much of a debate there. It's just the matchup here. But
I would say might have the best record. I don't know if he's the best fighter.
Him and Desmond Green are the only legit professional fighters below 7,800. Stevie Dalloway is also old. And then are you going to tell me he's a better fighter than – or he's a worse fighter than Olenek, Yandiev, Prashino, Sekulich?
Whoa, let's not go crazy.
Olenek has some wins. I mean, you know, that's way Olenek's better.
we'll just table that. Let Chris go. He's the most experienced and, in my opinion, most professional fighter in that bunch. Sorry, Chris.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I think you know we have some tough crowd today. I mean, a knockout loss to Curtis Melinder. I mean, it's not great from where Thiago Alves used to be as a fighter, but I don't think it's the end of the world. And I think that you know, for an 18-0 fighter, I mean, I had the same reaction everybody else did. You're like, oh my god, I can't wait to see this guy. But I mean, if you have that kind of, if you think he's going to be a world beater, I think you're going to be a little disappointed when you look at tape. I mean, really what he is, he's a very slow fighting sort of pressure counter puncher. There seem to be a lot of those on this card. And I think he's got fast hands. He's an accurate puncher, but I think Alves is going to have a lot of space and a lot of time to get those kicks off, those leg and body kicks. And especially he holds his guard very high, which I think is going to be, you know, another avenue for that. As I said, when he does throw, he's got fast hands, but it's going to be a very slow-paced fight. Alves isn't going to have to worry about that kind of reach disadvantage here. I think just moving around the cage, he's going to be a bit faster, if not, you know, at least can keep up with the speed. And, you know, I just think he can outwork him over three rounds. So I like Alves quite a bit as a dog player.
Dear God, I can't believe that we agree.
You know, Alves lost to Jim Miller when Jim Miller had Lyme disease. You know that, right?
He did, but is Konchenko going to grapple like that? And also, Joe, this is one of those, what other options do you have down there?
You know, I don't even have to say a word here. Sean's my lawyer. I love it.
Don't get used to it because we're going to war soon. We are going to war. But before that, we got to get through these next couple fights before we can do that. We have Shamil Abdurakhimov, 8,300, taking on Andrei Arlovsky at 7,900. This is one of my more confident dog picks of the card. And it's barely a dog pick as Arlovsky's 7,900. But you know what? I'm gonna say it counts here. As of right now, Abdurakhimov, I believe, is still the favorite at -135. Arlovsky's +125. Look, I think we finally dispelled the rumor that Arlovsky doesn't have a chin. Did that line, five dimes, something weird happened here. Best fight odds are showing that Arlovsky opened at -215. I don't quite believe that. Sorry, that was distracting. Weird. Arlovsky's coming off of a close loss against the prospect Tai Tuivasa, who's a much better prospect than Abdurakhimov. Way different fighter. I get that. We'll get there. He took punches from and beat Junior Albini. I get Albini hasn't looked great as of late. And a win against Stefan Struve. Arlovsky has toned down his aggression. He's shown from the old school days to become more of a point fighter. And I think that's going to pay off well for him in this fight against Abdurakhimov. The problem, again, as I've said a few times, is scoring, because Abdurakhimov is the John Dodson of the heavyweight division. There's no volume. He'll look to grapple, but there's a lot of standing and grabbing and awkward clinching. And I think Arlovsky's going to have enough in his tool belt to not get taken down, separate, land on during the separation. I think he's better at range, clearly. I think he wins a close decision. I like Arlovsky for the odds. The scoring is the issue. But on this card, any underdog that I have any inclination is going to win, I have to look at heavily. So I'm liking Arlovsky at 7,900. Chris?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because, you know, I've solidly backed Arlovsky in his last few. I think there's an argument that can be made to say that he won the Tuivasa fight. Third round was at least close. But I don't know. My problem with Arlovsky is that he's quicker than I think most people give him credit for. He's got a good chin, as you said, but he's very rote in that he basically just tries to throw the overhand right these days. And that's basically he'll throw a jab in there too every now and then. But that's basically what he does. I liked Abdulrakhimov in that Sherman fight. He showed I loved that left hook that he kept going to that eventually caught Sherman and knocked him out. I think that he's a really good advantageous grappler. He's good. He's a good reactionary on the takedowns. We saw it in the Derek Lewis fight. I agree with you that 8,400 is probably a bit too much for him. I just don't. I think this is going to be a slow-paced fight for each guy, but I think that the grappling will probably give Abdurakhimov the advantage. So I'm going to take Abdurakhimov here slightly, but this isn't a great fight for me to target.
Joe?
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much in that Chase Sherman knockout. I mean, Chase Sherman knocks himself out nightly when his head hits the pillow.
A hard shot. Come on.
He fought Grabowski to a three-round decision win. So I don't know what to look. This has low scoring snoozer all over it, written all over it. And I'm gonna say Arlovsky only because he fits better in lineups at 7.9K. That's it. I don't really have a strong take on this fight. I do think probably will get taken down a few times, but at 8.4K, I don't see a lot of value with low output striking and a handful of takedowns if the fight goes to a decision. So not a very confident pick, but I'll pick Arlo.
Real quick, Joe, question from YouTube. Cody asks, Joe, with obviously 100 lineups, you have exposure to all or most of the dogs. Which ones are you mixing in the most? Give me your top two.
Hang on 1 second. Since the question was asked, let's see.
Well, we know that Prochnio is at like 40%, right?
So no, it was 24, which is crazy. While Joe's looking that up, the co-main event of the evening is Nikita Krylov at 8,200, taking on Jan Blachowicz at 8,000. Krylov making his return to the UFC, I believe he asked to be released to spend more time with his family. I believe he had a child. He's back. He's coming off of a loss. His last UFC fight was a loss against Misha Cirkunov. Since then, he's been can crushing in Europe. Blachowicz continues to look good when people count him out. Wins over Jimmy Manoa. What's the other fight? The win over.
Devin Clark.
With the bulldog choke, and Jared Cannonier was the one I couldn't think of. So those. You know, Manoa is a good win to me. Clark showed he can deal with a grappler, caught him in a bulldog choke, an odd submission, but he got it done. And here against Krylov, I think Blachowicz is going to have the grappling advantage. Krylov is kill or be killed. This fight's like minus 290 to end inside the distance. 29 fights for Krylov has never been to a decision. I think it's about 29. Blachowicz, on the other hand, seems to go to decision a ton. I think Blachowicz is going to have just enough on the feet, straight punches, movement, mix in the grappling, takedown or two. I do think it's a very close fight. You could target both sides. Krylov, obviously, with his history for finishes, has a ceiling, as is Blachowicz, because Krylov, when he doesn't seem to be winning, seems to quit. So both these guys are playable. I think this is one of the fights you can target both sides of. I do lean Blachowicz. Chris?
Yeah, I'm gonna lean Krylov here. The reason I think is because, look, I like Blachowicz has really gotten a lot of tools in his veteranship. We saw, like, he fights behind a jab now. He never really did that before. We saw him counter very effectively in the Manuel fight with, you know, that left hook uppercut combination. He'll throw the lead uppercut too. Obviously, he's got the grappling, which he showed off in the Cannonier fight. So he's very toolsy, and I like that about him. I just think he's going to be a little too slow and a little too stiff for Nikita Krylov here. I think Krylov, we know that Blachowicz is hittable even when he's winning. Krylov, I think, is just going to be too powerful as well. He actually fought a heavyweight for a spell. I think he's going to be too powerful. I think he's going to be too quick. I think he can at least hang on the in the grappling, even if I can see that Błachowicz is the better grappler, which I think he is. But I think Krylov takes a win here, and a finish wouldn't shock me.
Joe, answer the previous question, and what do you got for this fight?
Okay, Ole and CB Dalloway are my two biggest.
Did you just say Olenek?
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
There's odds value there. Okay, yeah. So as it relates to this fight, Jan the man is the man. Look, I don't know. First of all,
there's odds value on Krylov too. Play him at 60%.
No. So here's the deal, right? Okay, so we don't know how much, if any, Krylov's improved crushing cans in Eastern Europe. That loss to Cirque looks so much worse now, based on what we know about you know, the pillow jawed Cirque, who seems to lose everywhere now. Very impressed with Jan the Man's last fight against Manawai. I actually had him, but I no way did I think he would outstrike Manawai, which is what he did. I thought he would rely on his wrestling. It could just be that he's peaking. I like him here. I think he's a fairly safe play in cash, although it's a very, very hard card to construct a cash lineup.
It's a nightmare.
I do like him in cash. I think this is a good fight to target just because it's really close in terms of salary. I think this is a really good fight to target. I am picking Jan the Man.
All right, let's get to it. Our main event of the evening. It is Mark Hunt, 8,600, taking on Alexei Olenek at 7,600. The line has gotten just crazy, in my opinion. Mark Hunt, we were talking about it beforehand, even though Chris is taking Olenek, I think he concedes the line is too close right now. It's -125 for Mark Hunt, +115 for Olenek. Hunt opened at -215, has been slowly coming down the last 10 days or so. Alexei Olenek, in my opinion, benefits from people, especially at heavyweight, having no idea what in the hell they are doing on the ground. The Ezekiel choke is a submission you hit in the gi. Push up on an elbow. Go 2-on-1 on one of the hands. Both your hands are free. If he's got incredible grip strength, maybe he does. Well, clearly he does, but when you watch the Ezekiel choke that he's pulling off, not once in all the videos I watched, and I watched a bunch, did I see anyone even attempting to defend properly. God help me if Mark Hunt falls into that category and doesn't even try to defend it. That being said, as well, Olenek takes a lot of damage on the feet. He's incredibly hittable. He pulls people into mount, which is, I can't condone that ever. Look, he's a one-trick pony, and Mark Hunt, even Olenek said, it's got, in Olenek's words, a big fat neck that's going to make the Ezekiel choke really hard to hit. Mark Hunt, look, I know he's 13-12 as a professional. He's also very old. There's more in to where I think at least he has an elite skill set for me in the striking. Olenek's a good grappler who specializes in something that just shouldn't work, and he's a heavyweight, so it does. That's how I see the fight. I can never get on the Alexei Olenek train. If he wins, look, personally, I'm fading him. That's my opinion. Do what you want with it. You know, obviously, play your own game. There's odds there, but I can never get behind Alexei Olenek. I just can't do it. Mark Hunt, he needs a quick finish to pay off first or second round. Hasn't really got one of those in a long time. The first time he had a first or second round knockout was 2016 against Frank Mir, which does not look very good. He did go 5 rounds against Stipe Miocic in 2015, you know, lost to Alistair Overeem, lost to Brock Lesnar, lost to Curtis Blaydes. Those are all way different names than Alexei Olenek, who I just think is better than. I like the elite skill set. I'm going to mix in Mark Hunt. I said my piece. I'm going to contain myself. Chris, go ahead.
Wait. I thought Chris goes last here.
I mean, you said you wanted to let him go. Okay, you know what? But I mean, you're playing a ton of Olenek too, so I can't trust anyone on this podcast.
No, I'm going to agree with you. So let me go first. Let me go first because I got 3 quick points to make here. Okay, one is I agree with everything you said. I actually like Hunt to win this fight. But there is odds value in Olenek, which is why I'm going to have some shares of him. Finally, this is not a must-play main event. So I don't want, anybody to think that you can't fade this main event, because I also agree with your point about scores. You know, it could be a, you know, if Hunt, first of all, I think no way this fight goes the distance. I think it's a horrible fight to stack in cash. I mean, a lot of people like to stack five-round main event.
Go stack the first fight to the last.
Yeah, stack where Dashavelli. That's going to be a much better fight. If you must stack. But I just because of the odds value, I will have some shares. I like him better because he does have a distinct path to victory, which I don't see for some of the other, you know, dogs. And he's actually not much of a dog. So my pick is Hunt, but I do advise having some shares of Ole in GPPs. Chris,
go ahead. Give us all the Alexei Olenek love.
Well, first of all, I don't know why they keep feeding Olenek these cans. But the first thing I'll say about the fight in general.
I will agree with you. Victor Pesta is a can. And Junior Albini is dead to me.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, haven't you considered the fact that if he keeps ruining your nights, that maybe eventually one time you should come around?
No, because Chris, have you watched these fights? Have you? I'm assuming you've rolled before. The Ezekiel choke.
I watched him on repeat.
Watch him on repeat with your pants down. Sorry, couldn't help it. Look, it's a gi choke. No one even tries to defend it right. I can't.
Okay, all right. In all seriousness, I think that we've gotten a little too carried away. I love the Ezekiel choke. I think it's awesome. But to act like that's the only thing he does is a little bit unfair to the guy. I think he's got obviously rear naked chokes. He likes to do that the neck crank, which is actually called a scarfold choke. He's actually got a knockout in the UFC over Jared Rosholt. So I think he's got he's got a lot of different ways to win here. I think that, he's a legit submission specialist. He's not just, an Ezekiel choke guy. And so I think that the way he likes to get his takedowns, which is up against the fence, is where we've seen Mark Hunt struggle with takedowns in the past. Mark Hunt is good at defending open mat takedowns because he limp legs out of them, but you can't do that up against the cage. So these guys just lock underneath the double and they get him down. And I think that's what Olenek's going to do here. And yes, he does take a lot of damage, but Mark Hunt, who's always been a slow-paced fighter somewhat, has gotten unbearably slow of late. He doesn't throw any strikes. He just seems to always be looking for the perfect knockout punch. That seems to be
and his MO. Petey Gonzalez.
No. Well, look, I mean, the guy's got bad knees, and he gets it done. What do you want from him? But I just think that he's gonna, for as slow as he is in his bad knees, he's gonna be the one pushing the pace here. He's gonna be the one with that crazy sambo striking, winging those hooks, trying to get Mark Hunt back up against the fence. And look, Mark Hunt, we saw him play around with that step and elbow and actually land one against Alistair Overeem. He didn't follow up on it, which really made me upset because I had Mark Hunt in that fight. But, I think that Mark Hunt can catch him coming in. But if Mark Hunt doesn't land the perfect shot here, I just think if this fight goes more than a round or a couple minutes, I find it hard to believe that he'll never end up on his back. I think that's going to happen, and I think Olenek's getting a sub here.
All right, agree to disagree on that one. We'll move to our hot takes. Real quick, I want to thank everyone who clicked the thumbs up on YouTube because we are, like 12 or 13 now. So
Can we recap our prior week's hot takes?
They were good. I don't remember them. I know me, I remember mine. I know I hit mine.
So I hit mine. Chris?
I hit Andrade knocking out Kovalkiewicz.
I said there would not be a white with a victory.
I don't remember what mine was. Does anybody know? I don't remember.
Offhand.
It must not have been very good if I don't remember.
I mean, it might have been. I honestly just don't remember. We'll try and keep them track and recap them. You guys got any hot takes for this edition?
My hot take is this. The leading scorer as a multiple of X is going to be sub 9K.
Woo.
That's my hot take.
You don't think Peter Yan scores 100?
I'm saying as a multiple of X. So, Sal, you know, based on salary, points per dollar.
Right.
I'm saying that I don't necessarily. Well, look, he could get a first round finish and, you know, score less than 100 points.
He could.
That's happened. So that's why I'm going to go that. It's a hot take. That's a hot take.
That's pretty hot. That means no one's going to score 100. That'd be an interesting.
Well, I said under 9K. Now that is under 9K.
You said 9X.
No, I said under 9K. I said the highest point score as a function of X is going to be under 9K.
I heard K and X mixed up. Okay, got it. Got it. Yeah, somebody in that mid range is going to hit. I think that's probably. I like that. The hot take, Chris.
Martin Prochnio, the Kyokushin karate expert, is going to stun and knock out Magomed Ankalaev.
Well, that helped me out.
Yeah, Joe loves that pick.
That would be awful for me. That would be horrendous for me. Absolutely positive.
You're playing with NASCAR money. Come on.
Horrendous. Not yet. I'm not. My hot take is going to be Mirab Divalishvili finishes Terry and Ware.
Yeah. Do you care to get a method in there or no?
Wow.
Ground and pound TKO.
I
think one of the times that Terry and Ware is trying to get up time after time after time, he's going to get sloppy, give up his back, turtle up, and get ground and pounded out of there. That's
okay. So here's one for debate. Will the Russian octagon girls be hotter than the Brazil octagon girls? I'm going to say yes.
I'll go with yes.
I'll say no.
Of course you will, because you like the underdogs.
Okay.
That's it for Fight IQ. Remember to go to rotowire.com/free. Check out all their usually paid content. Free for 10 days. No credit card required. Remember, lineup lock is tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. Guys, this was fun.
San Paulo next week, right?
I believe so. So, everyone, that's it. That's it for this week. Good luck in your contest. Join us live this week or next week if you didn't this week. Take care, guys.
Take care.